You're listening to the GP Soccer Podcast with your host, Giovanni Puccini. Today's GP Soccer Podcast is brought to you by the DiBernardo Soccer School. Hey there, folks. This is Giovanni Puccini of the GP Soccer Podcast. Welcome to another great episode of the GP Soccer Podcast. Thank you so much for tuning in again. Thank you so much for tuning into all the shows. The response, as I've told you on numerous occasions, has been absolutely wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. And I greatly appreciate my regular listeners, and I greatly appreciate all new listeners. And as you hear me say quite often at the end of the show, if you like what you heard today, tell everyone. And when I say that, you know, it's part, you know, kind of a cute way to kind of end the show. But, you know, in all seriousness, one of the most effective ways of folks like me, podcasters like me, you know, to get the word out, to get your show out, relies upon you. I rely on you, my listeners, to get the word out. You know, I'm not, and folks like me, podcasters like me are not, you know, part of a mega media network, like, say, for example, iHeartRadio, where they can pump millions of dollars into a podcast network and the associated marketing and promotion that goes along with it. That ain't me. That ain't folks like me. Most serious podcasters, and I'm a serious podcaster, are typically a one-man show or a two-man show. I do all of the work. I do all of the, you know, obviously do the interviews, and I do all the editing. I do all the show prep. I do all the show scripts. You know, I've got to market the show. I've got to promote it to get the word out. You know, in order to have listeners. So one of the things that you can do, you, my audience can do, all kidding aside, if you like what you hear on the GP Soccer Podcast, listen, I would greatly appreciate it. It would mean the world if you could just share it amongst those within your own social media. And if I can get more and more people to do that, before you know it, the audience expands. The audience expands. And I can reach more people. I'm truly lucky at this particular point to have a lot of people listening and a lot of people from different countries, actually. And that's a direct result of the marketing that I do. I have some connections around the world, and you take advantage of it, and those folks listen, and those folks will share it. So my audience is truly vast. So if you like what you hear, please tell everyone, and please share it amongst those in your own social media network. You know, along those same lines, in this day and age, you know, you can't do anything without having a presence on social media. So obviously I'm doing this podcast, but I'm also now on Facebook. That's brand spanking new. It's a bit of an announcement, I guess. So if you go to your Facebook and, you know, slash GP Soccer Podcast, you'll find my brand spanking new Facebook page, which I have every intention of kind of keeping all of you up to date with what's going on with the show, upcoming guests, any kind of complimentary content that I feel will benefit the show. I'm on Instagram and Twitter. So I'm out there. I'm out there. In addition to listening to the show, you can check in Facebook, Instagram, Twitter to find out what's going on the GP Soccer Podcast. But at the end of the day, folks, boy, if you could share the show amongst those within your network, boy, that would go a long way of really, really expanding the audience for me and the GP Soccer Podcast. So that's your unofficial homework assignment. That's your unofficial homework assignment. Spread the news about the GP Soccer Podcast. Upcoming shows. You know, our current show today, we're going to have an interview guest after the commercial break, Oscar De Limos. We've got the goalkeeper show coming up, where we'll spend an entire show dedicated toward goalkeeping. The coaches show. I did one back in season one or season two. I don't remember. We discussed coaching U6s. We'll tackle another specific age group with the coaches show. I have Frank DeLappa of the Boston Globe coming up in a future episode interview. And if you're a soccer historian, if you're a history junkie for the sport of soccer, this is one interview, one conversation you do not want to miss. Frank DeLappa is a long time, not just for the Boston Globe, but a long time journalist nationally. And he and I had a wonderful conversation about particularly, you know, soccer, the history of soccer here in the Boston area, the New England area. Really, really terrific interview. Brett Johnson is a future guest. Brett A fortuitous partner is overseeing a rather significant development project in Pawtucket, Rhode Island, that includes a 15,000-seat soccer-specific stadium, which is very exciting for soccer here in the New England area, and particularly down in, obviously, in Rhode Island. And a wonderful conversation with Brett and his vision for professional soccer in the Rhode Island area, and specifically in Pawtucket. My good friend Darius Shirzadi, a repeat guest from Project Go, will be on an upcoming show as well. So lots to look forward to. Really excited about the future shows. We'll be wrapping up season three right before the holidays. And we take a very short break for the holidays. You know, we let people kind of enjoy, you know, Thanksgiving and Christmas and all the associated holidays around that time of year. It typically, toward the end of January, we kind of reboot. We'll start season four. We'll start talking about some great stuff. I've got an entire theme for season four, which will be referred to as the State of the Game, where every episode in season four will feature a state here in the United States on the state of the game in Massachusetts or North Dakota or Wyoming, California, Texas, whatever. And I'm hoping to have some representatives from those states who I can interview, and we can talk about what's going on in those states. And so we'll devote an entire season on the state of the game. When it's all said and done, you really get a feel for what's happening in the different states across the United States of America. I'm really excited about that, where I'm dedicating an entire season towards soccer in America, soccer in the United States, and focusing in on those people who are the driving force toward player and coach development and taking the game to new levels, state by state by state. The state of the game. That's something you can really look forward to at the end of January when we kick off season four of the GP Soccer Podcast. So I'm excited about that. Got some odds and ends here before we get into my interview, my conversation with Oscar De Lemos. This is something I talked about a little while ago, and if you're from the Boston area, you know, you're familiar with the town, you're familiar with, you know, maybe the name. I talked about this gentleman, Ryan Puntieri, who was ousted as the girls soccer coach over at Hingham High School, which is a community down the here in the south of Boston. And just kind of a little bit of a review, he'd been there for 13 seasons. He won three consecutive state championships and had a great run in terms of success, had players go off to play at the college level. Really did for all, and you know, by all accounts, did a wonderful job, but was ousted because of, well, you know, parents who think they know better than most. They accused him of bullying. They accused him of, you know, why their kid wasn't playing enough or was not being a captain. All the usual, you know, the usual excuses parents come up with to go after a coach. In a bit of irony, Mr. Puntieri has been selected as one of the 2020 High School Coach of Significant Award winners from United Soccer Coaches. Can you imagine? So the High School Coach of Significance Award, and I'm going to read here from the United Soccer Coaches website, recognizes members who are coaching for character and using the soccer field to teach life lessons at the high school level. It is an opportunity for each state, in conjunction with United Soccer Coaches, to recognize coaches who are making an impact within their schools and communities well beyond their records of wins and losses. Mr. Puntieri was the girls' coach got recognized for that here in Massachusetts. Along similar lines, up in northern New Hampshire at Kennett High School, right? Very similar fashion. Great coach, David Hart. An amazing background, amazing credentials. His contract was not renewed for, again, parental complaints, all of which were groundless. His contract was not renewed, and they awarded, like big air quotes there, to a kid with little or no coaching experience, because an athletic director buckled to parental complaint rather than standing up for an outstanding coach. And by the way, Mr. Hart was nominated for that same recognition through United Soccer Coaches for the state of New Hampshire. You know, it's something that happens way too much. And as you've heard me talk about in the past, it gets under my skin. It just gets under my skin, you know? Let's see, what else we got here? I haven't talked about this in a while because I really don't have to, because You can't turn on the television, radio, or flip open your computer or your whatever mechanism you use to catch up on the news without, you know, hearing about the COVID-19 crisis. We're still in the depths of it. It's now getting worse. Here we are the tail end of October. And for a variety of reasons, all of which you know, because if you pay attention, you know, it's getting worse. And I have said from the get-go, I thought and still think that, putting athletes out on the field, whether it's a youth player or professional player, was just an abject failure of good conscience. So the list now is way, 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 way too long of all the athletes, the teams, the associated staff of folks who have been inflicted with the COVID-19. The list is way too long about games have been canceled, athletes who can't play. Of note, we've seen Cristiano Ronaldo. He is the latest international star to test positive for the coronavirus. He, as you know, he plays for the Portuguese national team as well as Juventus. And, he joins a list, and this is just scratching the surface, like Neymar, Kylian Mbappe, Pogba, Zlatan Ibrahimovic, Diego Costa. The list goes on and on and on and on. It's just ridiculous. Without beating the dead horse here, for me, it's a moral decision. If one person under your care and concern, we'll call it, if one person gets the COVID-19, that's one person too many. Heaven forbid that one person gives it to another and another and another. Heaven forbid those people share it with someone who's, got a pre-existing condition or an elderly person and they get sick and heaven forbid they die. As a moral choice, as a moral stand, I personally just couldn't do it. But here we are. Yes, we're seeing youth soccer, youth sports. We're seeing college sports. We're seeing pro sports. And all the while, this COVID-19 crisis gets worse and worse and worse and worse. And none of these people, none of these entities, none of these organizations seem to realize that they contribute to those numbers, the numbers of cases that we see go up every single day around the world. And here, particularly here in the United States, where it's a train wreck here in the United States because of mismanagement from the White House. We see the death rates going up, globally. And again, here in the United States because of said train wreck. Hey, let's just contribute to that. Let's just contribute to that. So in any event, I don't talk about it as much because there's no need to. You get your fair share of COVID-19 information on a daily basis. And last but not least, before we head to our conversation with Oscar de Limas, on a lighter note, I picked this off the AP Wires about Gunnersaurus. Gunnersaurus. Well, who is Gunnersaurus, you might ask? Well, let me read for you right off the AP Wires here. Mesut Ozil, one of soccer's highest paid stars, has offered to cover the salary of Arsenal's Gunnersaurus mascot a day after the man inside the English Premier League team's dinosaur costume was let go to save money. The fate of Jerry Quay and his alter ego, Gunnersaurus, has been in limbo since Monday when reports emerged that the club was letting Key, I'm hoping I'm saying his name right, Key go as part of a cost-cutting effort that had already led to the elimination of 55 jobs. Key has been mugging for Arsenal as Gunnersaurus since the character was introduced 27 years ago. The dismissal struck many fans as particularly egregious because the same day, the club spent more than $58 million to sign midfielder Thomas Partey. The estimated net worth of the team's owner, Stan Kroenke, hovers above $8.3 billion. That's with a B, folks. An Arsenal spokesman declined to say whether the team would accept Ozil's offer, stating that the team does not comment on personal matters. Quote, Gunnersaurus is not extinct and will return to action when fans are allowed back at matches, the spokesman said on Tuesday. $8.3 billion and you can't hold on to a mascot. In any event, thanks to Mesut Ozil for stepping up and paying this guy's salary. So again, on a lighter note. So we're going to break for a brief commercial message. As noted earlier, on the other side, we'll talk to Oscar de Limas. This is Giovanni Pacini. This is indeed the GP Soccer Podcast. Don't you dare go anywhere. What if I were to tell you that there is an opportunity to experience cutting-edge soccer coaching education for incredible prices? A program where you can choose a youth diploma, senior diploma, or cognitive soccer diploma. How about taking courses that are designed to deliver impactful information that will change the way you teach the game? Well, that can all be found at the DiBernardo Soccer School. Coach Marcus DiBernardo is a worldwide leader in cognitive soccer coaching, and his work has been featured in Europe, South America, and in the United States. Most recently, he was the only American invited to present at the Conference for Soccer and Neuroscience. The DiBernardo Soccer School proudly announces the first ever Virtual Director of Coaching program. This one-of-a-kind program partners with your club, is 100% customizable, and features such options as Coach DiBernardo training your coaches virtually, providing your club with comprehensive coaching methodologies for every age group, ideas for business development, providing marketing materials for your club website, and so much more. For further information, visit CoachDiBernardo.com or contact Marcus DiBernardo at CoachDiBernardo@gmail.com.
Hey, this is Frank DiLapa of the Boston Globe, and you're listening to Giovanni Pacini's Soccer Podcast.
Hey there, folks. This is Giovanni Pacini, host of the GP Soccer Podcast. Welcome back. Welcome back. I'm very excited today to have another guest, another wonderful guest to appear here on the GP Soccer Podcast. And as you've heard me talk on numerous occasions, and I really hope you don't get sick of me saying this to all of you, how lucky I am to have such a wide range of wonderful guests, of substantive guests, of guests of some great expertise across the soccer world that I'm able to bring to you. It's for me, it's just a real humbling experience to know that I have, so and so on who's got an extraordinary background in the game, or they have world class credentials, or those types of people. And today's no different. So as I noted to you before we broke into the commercial, our guest today is Oscar De Lemos. Oscar currently is the Director of League Operations for the Rhode Island Youth Superliga, also known as the Superliga. He is Vice President of Soccer Rhode Island and has served in that capacity since the year 2000. He's a U.S. Soccer Grade 8 referee. He has dedicated himself extensively toward coaching education, having earned U.S. Soccer C&D license as well as the GNF license. He has secured the youth module certifications. He has earned a United Soccer Coaches Goalkeeper 1 and Goalkeeper 2 diploma, as well as United Soccer Coaches Special Topics diplomas and Grassroots diplomas. He has in the past served as a soccer coach with Bristol Youth Soccer, was president of Bristol Youth Soccer for 6 years. He was vice president of Rhode Island Youth Soccer Association and director of coaching education for Rhode Island Youth Soccer Association and Soccer Rhode Island. He was the assistant coach at Mount Hope High School, and also served as the head coach at Mount Hope High School. And in true full transparency here to my audience, I am the director of coaching education for the Superliga. Oscar and I are colleagues, friends, passionate folks about the game. So that's full disclosure. So Oscar De Lemos, welcome, welcome, welcome to the GP Soccer Podcast.
My friend Giovanni, thank you so much for inviting me. It's a pleasure. And we've probably known each other almost a year, but it seems like we've known each other for many more. How about that?
I would have to agree. And you and I talk with great regularity because of our association with the Superliga, and it's not unusual for you and I to kind of just veer off and just chat about all kinds of soccer things and even non-soccer related things for that matter. And yeah, we're two of these people who we feel like we've known each other for a long period of time. I absolutely agree. So where I like to start, Oscar, with all my guests, and I'm always curious, I'll be quite honest with you, I'm always curious, what is the Oscar De Lemos story? So where did you grow up? Did you play growing up? Were there any teams that you followed growing up? Share with my audience, the kind of the Oscar De Lemos story.
Sure. Grew up playing soccer in the 70s, and there was no youth soccer leagues or clubs at that time. I mean, there might have been a few around the state of Rhode Island, but in my area where I come from, Bristol, Rhode Island, there wasn't any. Bristol Youth Soccer didn't form until 1980. And we had a Portuguese soccer club in town, an amateur club, and they had youth teams from time to time. And, you know, I begged my dad, who really wanted me to get into music. And, you know, I played the accordion for several years, which I really loved. You know, got pressured with friends from school to play soccer. And I enjoyed playing it during, you know, recess and all that. And then an opportunity came with the Portuguese soccer club, and I played for a couple of years, had a lot of fun with it. You know, the league was kind of weak. You know, we'd play a few years, and then for a year or two, there would be nobody, you know, there would be not many teams. So that was my extent. And then when I got to high school, I really wanted to play real bad. So I started on a JV team in 1978. Played that one season, and then unfortunately my dad passed away December of that of 78, and you know, my mom, it was kind of a shock for my mom, and my brother was only 11 at the time, I was 13, and so we struggled through high school to get through, and then when I could work, I went to work part-time to help my mom, so soccer disappeared. You know, I followed what I could on TV or what was available on TV. You know, nowadays we, you know, you can turn the channel to NBC Sports or whatever, Fox, and, you know, there's some type of soccer going on, which is great, for our generation growing up now. But back then there wasn't as much as, you know, we could see now. But, so that was the end of, pretty much playing soccer and so forth and so on. Then, after graduating, went to college for about a year and had met my wife through school, and we decided to get married. So we did, and my old high school coach came back to me, and he was the president of or the vice president of the youth soccer league. I had just started a couple of years. Asked if I wanted to coach. That was it. That one invitation has got me to where I am today. It wasn't for Mr. Tony Texera. I'll mention his name. Great friend all through the years. Good mentor. Very disciplined coach of the game, which I learned a lot from. And he, you know, he got me involved. And that's history from there. I ended up coaching. I had no kids yet. So I coached several teams throughout a few years. And then when my son was old enough to play, that was awesome. He got involved, and then, you know, I got into the ranks of, you know, secretary of the league, vice president. I became president, and I went to get my certification courses because, you know, I was really into coaching at the time. And then from there, you know, coached for several years and different levels, different things, and then had the opportunity to coach high school, which I really was looking forward to, and won a championship there as an assistant coach, and then as a head coach for 7 years, you know, brought the program back to notoriety, and you know, end up going to the finals 1 year. Unfortunately, came up on the wrong end of it, but it's been great, the coaching aspect and all that. And then as I was involved with the state association, the new organization, Soccer Rhode Island, that was formed, didn't want the responsibility of running a competitive league. So since I was doing it with the Rhode Island Youth Soccer Association, I put together a business plan, put together a business along with some key individuals. And we started in 2000. And we had over 300 some teams, and we've built that up to as much as recently 560 teams in our spring league. So it's been a fun ride, bumpy at times, as you probably know, Giovanni. We've all go through our bumps and bruises at times. It's been a lot of fun. I've met a lot of great people, just like you, and had a lot of great memories. And I think one of the best memories that I can remember is high school players, after they graduate and then they see you two or three years later, and they, hey, Coach D, how are you? And they remember you. They talk about the experience. It's a great feeling. to hear that and get to talk with former players. And even nowadays, you know, I walk in the store, hey, Coach D, how are you? You know, and they have kids of their own now and everything. So it's been a fun ride, I should say. And I'm looking forward to several more years of this fun ride in different aspects. So,
you know,
I hope I wasn't too long-winded here.
No, not at all. Not at all. I was fascinated by, you know, people's stories, you know, where they came from and where, you know, their soccer passion, you know, was born, so to speak. You know, we're about the same. I think I'm a little bit older than you. But, yeah, the 1970s, there was not a whole heck of a lot of soccer growing on. I, like you, have, you know, there was no youth soccer. There was no club soccer. It didn't exist. I was very lucky to have played for the local church, Immaculate Conception Church, over in Weymouth, Massachusetts. And I had an Italian soccer coach, Gianfranco Scimone. I was very lucky to have someone who knew the game. And that was it. You know, that was it in terms of playing back in those days. Because as you noted, the number of opportunities that are available to kids now is, you know, just didn't exist back then. And
the best soccer that I really enjoyed was recess during middle school. I mean, we would eat lunch so quickly that you wouldn't imagine. So we can get that 15, 20 minutes outside. We already had the teams picked, and we went at it. And, I mean, you want to see competitive soccer. No coaches, no referees. It was just the players themselves and great soccer. And, you know, we'd come back to school sweating, dirty, and the teachers would say, what have you guys been through, a fight or something? And that was great soccer. And then we then looked forward to playing soccer during the gym time, you know, and that was only in the fall. And we resurrected that, you know, when it was time to play gym, when the gym teacher would say, okay, we're playing soccer for the next four classes. We loved it. That was it. That was it for us.
You know, where I grew up in Weymouth, Massachusetts, south of Boston is, you know, a white suburban community, certainly in no way, shape, or form could be categorized as an ethnic community. And I was the only weird kid out there who was kicking a ball rather than catching it or throwing it or anything like that. And goodness, Oscar, contrary to, you know, your experiences, I had to kind of convince kids to, hey, let's get together after school and we'll play soccer down at Weston Park. And a couple of kids would show up and we'd play. And it wasn't until, again, like in that Conception Church where, you know, mostly the ethnic kids, you know, folks in that area whose parents were from another country, you know, we got together and played. But boy, I had a battle, man. I had to battle. I was the weird kid who was kicking the ball and, you know, not doing anything else.
I'll tell you another quick story. I, you know, right after my dad passed, so my mother was very possessive of us. So, you know, she wouldn't let us go to the town common, you know, because we didn't have a lot of family here. And so we were kind of stuck around the house. And fortunately, my next door neighbor had grandkids who were our age. So there was a year or two there where after school, you know, we'd finish our homework quick. And then we actually played street soccer because we lived on a small side street. It was myself, my brother, and another neighbor, and then the three grandkids of my neighbor right next door. So we were playing 3v3. We gather these two bricks. We made a little goal in the middle of the road, and then down, you know, further down, we do the same. And there was a fence toward the factory. That was the bounds of one side of the road, and then the sidewalk was the other side, right? And then we play. All of a sudden, a car comes, and you know, at first we'd move the bricks, but then we got sick of it and said, "We're not moving the bricks. The cars are big enough; they can go over them," right? And so there was times when the cars, we stopped playing, the cars would come by and they drive over the brick. But I remember once this lady, she gets really upset at us and says, "I'm not moving this car. You guys got to move those bricks or else, you know, my car's going to get, you know, damaged or whatever." But it was some fun time. And that was my experience with street soccer.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's street soccer, literally street soccer in its purity. Something, you know, something that's certainly lacking in today's society amongst young kids, just don't go out and play. They just don't go out and play like when you and I were growing up. There's so many other diversions that take their attention away from just going out to play. So yeah, that was, you know, that was the way to go. Interestingly, comparison again, growing up in the Boston area, in a white suburban neighborhood, we played street hockey. We played three line.
I did a little bit of that too.
Yeah. You know, and instead of moving the bricks, we had to move the goal. And I was a goaltender. I was a goaltender, so I was responsible for picking the goal up, you know, taking on the sidewalk, and then the car would go by, and you put it back, and you'd play again. But no, it was street athletics, devoid of coaches, and we were only bound by our own amount of creativity. We made up our own rules, and, you know, what do you do when there's, you know, there's seven of you, there's an odd number, what do we do with the odd number? The things that...
We figured it out, right?
We absolutely, Oscar, we figured it out. And that is, and you know, and all the data is out there, all the research is out there, you know, to support this. That has hindered, you know, kids over the last couple of generations, you know, relative to their ability to sort issues out, how to communicate, how to socialize, how to problem solve.
I agree because, as you said, I mean, I drive by parks or fields. You don't see four or five kids kicking the ball around. What you will see is a practice with a coach, right? So you don't get that, the kids don't get that opportunity to do what we did as kids. This is how we're going to play today. This is the rules today. Okay. We're going to play 3v2. Okay. Too bad. We got three. You got two. Figure it out. You know, that environment doesn't exist. It may in a couple of pockets here and there. But as we drive around, or I drive around the state and outside the state at different times of the year and different times during the weekend, you don't see it.
No, you don't. And it's something that has to change. And, you know, and you've heard me talk about this. It's something that is what coaches need to create in their training environments. And I even hesitate to use the word training when I'm talking about street soccer. But it's imperative that youth coach, particularly the grassroots level, with regularity, create environments where the kids just play. And then the real artwork behind being a coach in that environment is say throwing a curveball at the players, for example. And you've heard me talk about this. You know, they go out there and play, and you say, okay, hold on a second. And you take the goals, and let's say you turn them around, you take them off the end line, and you give them a little space. And you turn the goals around. And the kids look at you like, well, what are you doing? And then I always use those magical words, figure it out. And it's still street soccer. It's still street soccer. I still leave them to their own devices to play the game. But what I have done is altered the environment where they now have to figure this problem out. Maybe we play with four goals, you know, two on one side, two on the other side. You know, you can attack two, you can defend two. And you don't tell them. You just set it up.
That's right.
So it's imperative that our grassroots coaches, you know, create the street soccer environment that you and I have just spoken about relative to our youth, but yet have the wherewithal, the capacity to change the environment where now kids have to think differently. They have to problem solve because you've thrown something different at them. So, Go ahead.
Right. I've attended, as you know, the United Soccer Coaches Workshop Convention. Mm-hmm. Many years in a row, and for the listeners who are listening to our podcast today, great workshop. If you are a soccer aficionado, coaching education person, there is no other event that you can bring together professional coaches and talk about soccer and learn the latest and greatest and learn from each other than this convention. And I bring it up because it taught me one important thing that I used when I was coaching youth soccer back in the 90s, and it was this. So when the players get to practice, right, the coaches, you know, should have this field set up or his training area set up and all that. But when the kids get there, what do they typically do, right? They're talking with each other. They could be horsing around, etc. So I, you know, in one of the sessions that I attended, the coach of the session, the instructor said, try this approach. And this was this. The players get to training. You give them a space and you tell them, here's some cones. There's the ball. There's scrimmage vests. As the players come, you guys take and utilize the equipment and play whatever soccer you want to play for 10 minutes while we wait for the entire team to come. The only thing I don't want is I don't want you shooting all over the place, okay? but play soccer. That was the only stipulation I put. I didn't want them kicking the ball all over the place, etc. So the first couple of practice, it was kind of strange to them. You know, hey, the coach is not telling us what to do. But after two or three practices, the kids were getting there early, the training, almost all of them. And they would set up the cones, a small sided game, and they pick, you get the pennies and we don't. And they played on their own.
Sure.
For 10, 15 minutes. And I'll tell you, this was like toward the end of my coaching youth teams, because then I had a break for a while before I went to high school. But wow. To see that happen, it was like, wow, this is street soccer right in front of us. But we had to help and push it, you know, to create that environment for them to get into.
Yeah, so very true. Basically, what you're talking about here is you gave them freedom. You gave them
we did.
Freedom to organize, freedom to play, freedom to enjoy, freedom to have fun. And you know me and that word fun, Oscar.
F-U-N.
Yeah, F-U-N's a big one, but you gave them freedom. So let's take a step back from this, because I'm going to dive deeper into coaching education, coaching development. Rhode Island. You know, Rhode Island is a small state. I think it's the smallest state in the country. However, it is a dynamic soccer state. I did some numbers crunching here earlier in preparation for the show. Through Soccer Rhode Island, there are over 22,000 youth players, over 3,500 coaches, and over 120 boys and girls high school programs. That's a dynamic soccer community. As one who has spent virtually his entire soccer career in the state, why is that? Why is such our little state in Rhode Island such a dynamic soccer state?
And it's grown to that, right? It you know, we talk about 20 years ago, 25, 30 years ago, it wasn't that way. But I think the popularity of the sport, it gives the players opportunity to kick the ball without investing a lot of money from the parents' side. By switching to small-sided games, gave the opportunity for the kids to touch the ball more often. I remember one of the first years coaching soccer, we were doing 8v8 with under-8s. With goalkeepers. I mean, can you imagine that beehive with 16 players on the field? It was like, wow. And little Joey, you know, who wasn't that, you know, inclined to play, rarely touched the ball. So, but anyway, I don't want to get off into that. But I think that the sport itself, with the help of many individuals in the state, from, you know, the local volunteers to the presidents to all that, really did a tremendous job marketing the sport to a point where its popularity has gotten really, really high. And the, you know, it provides very levels of competition for kids at every different levels of play. Between, you know, we talk about micros, which are just kids just starting out kicking the ball, to you know, recreational soccer, to travel, you know, state travel, and then you talk at a higher level of premier level, and you have ODP injected in there too. Has provided a level to all kids at all levels, and with that popularity, that spawned, I believe, the high school programs, where many high schools, especially when I was growing up, didn't have a soccer program, but because the youth program started flourishing in their town, a lot of support was thrown at several school committees to invest in the program, the soccer. And I know there were some programs who grew to having the varsity team, JV team, and two freshman teams, believe it or not, some in some school districts. So it's a dynamic situation. We have tremendous amount of ethnic background in our small state, you know, between Spanish, Portuguese, English, you name it. They don't want to leave anybody out. That all has attributed to this, you know, the ethnic communities. You know, soccer is number one in the world, and they've had a lot of influence in that, especially in the inner cities. And it's grown. It's definitely grown, and it's definitely, as you said, a dynamic situation here. And being in a small state, it's a plus for us, right? We can travel anywhere within an hour or around an hour to play any club in the state. And you can't say that of any other state, you know? So we're fortunate. We're fortunate. And, although numbers are down a little bit recently, but the popularity and the enjoyment of the game is still there.
You know, you throw on top of that, off the top of my head, the college scene in Rhode Island, the
Providence
College, URI, those two in particular, Division One level are.
Yeah, and even Brown University.
Sure. Brown University.
Yep. And let's talk about the junior colleges, CCRI.
Yep.
Has gone to the championships, the National Junior Championships several times. And on the women's side, they've won it twice, So even at the college level, and I give credit to some of the coaches. I'm not too familiar with some of them at the moment because there's been such a changeover, but those that I've known in the past, we're starting to pull local talent onto those teams, and we've gotten, real influence from our state onto a lot of those university or college teams. Even Roger Williams, which is in my backyard here, has become a very good, strong D3 school for us.
Yeah, and when I was a head coach at the college of Pilates, we used to compete when I was, oh, goodness, Oscar, it's been so many years. I think when I was at Eastern Nazarene College, Roger Williams was in our conference, the Commonwealth Coast Conference, and I remember Jim Cook was there for a lot of years.
He's actually was an NCAA instructor, I believe, at the time.
Yep, absolutely, yep. Jimmy did a great job at Roger Williams. You think about it from top to bottom, bottom to top, it's a small state, but my goodness, what a dynamic state in terms of soccer. So we put the state in context a little bit, which is great. Now let's hyper-focus a little bit on the Superliga. So for my audience, Oscar, what is the Superliga? Navigate, if you will, my audience to, where it all started, why it started, and where it's at now. So again, circling back, what is the Superliga?
So thanks, Giovanni. So the Superliga, officially called the Rhode Island Youth Superliga, and the word Superliga comes from Portugal, right? Well, I'm Portuguese, and it's the Superliga there, or in Spain, it's the La Liga. So Liga is league, right? And obviously super meaning the best, right? So when I had the idea to put this together, I wanted it to be the best youth league possible. And that's always been, and in conversations that I've had with you recently, it's always been my thing. How can we make this the best youth soccer experience for kids and their families, right? So it's a league that it's a competitive travel league for in-house teams in Rhode Island. And we've been fortunate that we've had a few Massachusetts clubs join us recently and one from Connecticut, So we've expanded a little bit outside our borders. And it has been enjoyable to see the commitment and the involvement of all the clubs into this. So we started back in 2000. And again, as I mentioned earlier, it was due to the fact that the state organization wasn't in the business of running leagues. And at that time, many leagues throughout the country were run by individual organizations, or weren't run by the state organization, or the state national state association. And so I, being the person who ran it for the state previous, obviously had a little upper hand and an idea how to put this all together, but I took it to a different level. I brought in a few professionals who were key in the development of certain parts of the league. The way I looked at it is, you can take so many teams, figure out a schedule, when they're playing, where they're going, but that, to me, that's not the full experience of a league. And I think it's the league's responsibility to foster and assist coaching education. It's important that the league also foster and assist in referee education. Okay. And just recently we started talking about parent, not so much parent education, but parent awareness stuff. Okay. To me, that's the whole package. And then on top of that, we've created programs that allow the players to enjoy other aspects of soccer. For example, we created the Skill Soccer Challenge, which this day is one of our best programs that we love. And we get over 500 kids, or close to 500 kids, that are involved from all ages from 8 and under through 14 and under, who compete in regional competitions by dribbling, shooting, juggling, and passing. And we've done this for now 15 years, and we do it in four regions of the state, and the top finishers in each age group become the winners. And then, you know, we parade them up at Gillette Stadium with our great sponsors, the New England Revolution. And then they get recognized at our awards banquet in August. So that's part of another program. We also have a recognition program where we recognize the accomplishments of our coaches, accomplishments of our referees, our volunteers, being coordinators, et cetera, et cetera. And then we provide, you know, the end of year competitions, you know, the championship games, the playoffs, et cetera, like that. So we took it from just, you know, putting a schedule together and that type of a form league to creating an environment, or what we call a youth soccer experience, that it's a little bit more than just a league. When you become part of Superliga, it's not just the league, but it's the other pieces that come with it. A year and a half ago, we created a partnership with the United Soccer Coaches to provide coaching education for our membership. A majority of our clubs, you know, bought into it. And unfortunately, if it wasn't for the COVID or the pandemic that struck us prior to the spring season, we would be in our second year of this program, and providing coaching education certification, providing avenue for resources for coaches, bringing in a gentleman of Giovanni Pacini's caliber to assist with that, has made, I think, our league the youth soccer experience for players. So so that's where we're at. And, you know, I tell my staff, we have 10 part-time staff members, and I tell them occasionally when we meet, is that we're always looking to do something better next year. You know, what can we, what do we do well this year? And what did we do okay this year that we can do better next year? We always got to do something better next year. And that's always been our goal, is to continue to improve, whether it's technology, whether it's in certain programs, etc. It's always a goal of mine to continue to move Superliga to another higher level.
You know, I'm a little partial, a little biased here, because I am involved with the Superliga. But listening to what you described should be arguably the model for every youth soccer organization, because what you've created is something that is, you know, that is, it's enjoyable, it's fun, it's fulfilling. It's not just, okay, we're going to go play soccer, and when the game's over, the game's over. There are so many other things that not only the players, but the parents and now even the coaches can get involved with, above and beyond, you know, traditional, okay, just drop my kid off and watch him play soccer, or just going to coach a game, that type of thing. There's so much more to that. And I say that for a reason, and you've heard me say this numerous times, Oscar. We lose in youth sports, soccer included, obviously, approximately 70% of youth players before they hit sometimes middle school. They quit before they hit middle school. And the number one reason, as you know, it's not fun. So what you're talking about here in terms of having an all-encompassing program for all the entities involved is that idea that this is fulfilling, it's joyous, it's fun, it's something else to look forward to. And human nature being what it is, whether you're a child or you're an adult, you just want to stay with it. You want to stick with it. So for that, I tip my cap to you, and I'll just put it right out there. I would not have gotten involved, you know, had I not known that or appreciated that, you know, as far as how a youth soccer organization should function.
I appreciate that, Giovanni. But I'd be remiss for not saying that it's not just me, my wife and our staff, but a lot of credit though goes to the local organizations, their volunteers, because without them, obviously, we would be nothing. But they helped. They are a great support of this. And they've helped us make us what we are today. Without them, could not happen.
So I want to really touch upon that collaboration. Collaboration is, my goodness, something that's is so very important to any organization. What were some of the things that you employed? What were some of the mechanisms that you tried to reach a point where you can collaborate so well with all the clubs that are involved in the Superliga?
Well, I'll tell you, in this day and age, many of the parents, especially the younger parents who are, maybe have been involved in sport or soccer for a couple of years, maybe a few more, they're all busy with their personal lives. And just taking time to coach is probably the maximum time that they can give, for most part. Technology now has given us an opportunity to reach out to almost any individual and help them or assist them in communication and providing support in many ways. So I talk about, the computer, the online Zoom, the Google or whatever format that people use has made us be able to reach out more efficiently and more quickly to almost everybody, and that includes coaches and referees, to get important information to them, to give them an opportunity to give us feedback. It's always great to have a face-to-face meeting with people, but what we saw happening is, like I said, the lives get in the way, have larger priorities. So we incorporated, the technology about 3 years ago, and it's been a success. Our attendance rate for most meetings are 90%, which is great. We never got 90% when we had people face to face. And then we have the opportunity to record these so that if we need to go back and, replay them or show them to people who unfortunately couldn't attend, we have that opportunity. So I would say the communication has created this connection with us and our clubs, the technology, a lot better, and has allowed us to, get the word out, get our programs, get everything out to these folks, and also feedback from them, which is so important to us, much easier and more efficiently.
So I want to shift gears just a little bit. I want to tie in your personal story as it relates to coaching education, and then coaching education overall in the Superliga, and I guess even in the state of Rhode Island. So, starting with the personal side, what compelled you to dedicate your personal soccer journey to include coaching licenses and certifications? And dovetailing your personal journey, what's your overall sense regarding coaches dedicating themselves in Rhode Island toward coaching education?
Well, for me, it was the passion or the eagerness to learn more. I wanted to learn more. I wanted to be able to pass that along to the players I was coaching, more higher level coaching to them, get them to understand the game better at a higher level. And I knew from just my personal experience of watching and reading and seeing other people that I needed more. And that's when I committed myself to attend, the local courses that were here. I remember attending, I don't know if you remember, Ed Bradley.
Sure.
Coach at URI.
URI, yep.
Great, great soccer instructor. One of the best ones that I've ever attended. Made you feel comfortable. Never made you feel like one of the coaches, right? Not like it was like, me, Tonto, you, Jane, no, that type of thing. No, great, great instructor, great influence on me, and inspired me to go to a higher level. So I ended up going to my National C license down in Florida, at the University of South Florida. And I'll tell you, the best experience of my life in coaching education. I came back sore, but I came back fulfilled, with energy and opportunity. And I would have continued on, but I unfortunately got injured at work and had back issues for many years. did not allow me to physically play the game at a level that I think I needed to participate in a lot of those high level courses. So I went the youth module route and took, you know, the national lessons up in St. Paul's School in New Hampshire. Mm-hmm. Great facility. Dr. Dave Carr, Dr. Ron Quinn, another influenced guys, Bill Buren, a lot of guys who influenced my time. Unfortunately, I didn't get to meet Dr. Tom Fleck many times until his illness and then, unfortunately, his passing several years ago. But for the once or two times I didn't meet him, he was a great instructor of youth soccer. So I wanted to learn more, and that's why I did what I did. And I think it helped me become who I am today. And now I'm able to take that perspective and hopefully share that with other coaches. That's coaching education to me is near and dear to my heart, as you know, and we've had many conversations about this over this past year. And to me, the opportunity for coaches to take advantage comes back again to the availability in their lives. You know, some of the stuff takes, you know, several hours to do over several days. And, you know, we try to make it as convenient as possible in the combination of, you know, obviously webinar and in-house or in-person training to try to give the coaches, you know, tools that they can then take back and utilize with their teams. So, and that's what we've tried to help assist with the state organization. We've done that similar to also on the referee side. With the state referee committee, but you know, I still attend every year the United Soccer Coaches Convention. I see many field sessions and attend many lectures. That you know, for me, I continue to learn every year something, and always want to take that and then share that with everybody as much as I can. I think as coaches, we owe it to our players to, you know, share information with each other, so that we can all make each other better and in turn make the players better.
So is your sense then, taking from your personal journey to the state dynamic, is your sense then that the overall dedication of coaches in the state of Rhode Island are dedicated toward, you know, securing coaching licenses and certifications and diplomas and the like?
I want to say that the need is definitely there, and I want to say that the enthusiasm is there. The issue becomes now is the time and energy for them to go through this. You know, it'd be great if we could do a 3-hour course, Giovanni, and give them all the boilerplates and everything in the world so they can use. But unfortunately, we know that we can't do that, right? We need more time to show them, you know, these the new grassroots, the new licensing, whatever that they may be attending. What it's all about, and it takes time. And for those who do attend, you know, they become eager and they start asking questions. Now we start this dialogue back and forth, which is also an educational tool. So the enthusiasm's there. Unfortunately, you know, life, work gets in the way. But as I mentioned, you know, we try to find ways to make it convenient for coaches to take this, you know. And again, the United Soccer Coaches Partnership that we created a year and a half ago helped that way, where now they can go to a website, they can go and get resources to assist them. And then the online e-learning tool that United Soccer Coaches have, where coaches can now take certain courses online at their convenience. So,
which has been expanded.
Yes. I actually was on this this afternoon before we I jumped on with you here, and noticed there's quite a few new ones here, which is great.
I'll be having Ian Barker on in the coming episodes, where he and I will talk at length about the new offerings from United Soccer Coaches and you know, methods by which folks can take courses virtually. Which you know, in this well, we're going to get into this in a minute. Yeah. Pandemic,
but let me, if I could add to that, Giovanni, sure. I will say this: I give credit to all the clubs. They do make coaching education a priority. They do try to encourage all their coaches. Obviously, you know, some of them are a little bit difficult sometimes to encourage, but I give credit to the clubs. They make education a top priority, and they try within their realm of their organization to try to provide that.
Yeah, it's so very important. You know, there's always a discussion, about mandating licensure, mandating certification, mandating, the securing of diplomas and the pros and cons of doing that. I interviewed Dr. David Carr, who you spoke about him. We covered this very area about, coaching licensure and that type of stuff. And he was a proponent of, if my memory serves me correct, about mandating it. And then, as you know, the fallout of if you were to mandate licensure, that, you may not have people coaching, which then says, well, so be it. You may then get someone who will then step up and get coaching, a licensure or diploma or whatever, to fill in that gap. So it's a tough thing. It's a tough conversation to have, whether to mandate it or not mandate it. But yeah. No matter what,
it's a great debate. It's been a great debate with us, Giovanni, because, as many of those that want it mandated because they want to continue to increase the level of coaching, because competition is everywhere, right? Not only within our sport, but in other sports, right? And if we can get our coaches to a certain level where it continues to make the game enjoyable, enthusiastic for the kids and the families, they're going to stay. They're not going to seek anything else. And I think the mandating of certain certifications is important. Now you look on the flip side where, now coaches are going to say, well, I give them all, this amount of times all I can give. Now you're asking me to do this. And so you get that side of the story, right? So it's a great debate, but I think that as organizations continue to help develop, get volunteers in and create this bigger pool of coaches, those who are really into it and enjoy it and want to learn more about a game will seek that. And those who are there just to help fill the gap and, be there so that there is a team, especially on the recreational level, maybe there's something a little bit different for them, not as extensive as for others who are probably traveling,
Yeah, well, the research is out there that says those coaches who dedicate themselves toward coaching education, the coaching efficacy improves. Earth-shattering news there. And then by association creates a more enjoyable environment for the players, and which then affects the retention rate.
And it gives credibility, right?
Of course it does.
Gives credibility to the clubs because now the clubs can say, hey, we mandate our coaches to have this type of certification. The parents, would feel that this credibility, that the club is looking out for the players and trying to do the best for the players, give them the best experience, and it makes it more attractive.
As you very well know, I often compare youth soccer organizations to school systems.
Yep.
And,
I remember.
you heard me say it a million times, Oscar.
Many times, coach.
The players are students. The field is a classroom, and the coach is indeed a teacher.
Teacher. Yep.
And like any good school systems, teachers are certified and qualified for the age group of which they teach. Soccer is no different. You need to have certified, qualified teachers of the game, specific to the age group that they're teaching, in order to create a far more effective teaching learning environment.
I agree, coach. It's a no-brainer.
That's not a Pacini thing. That's steeped in research. Steeped in research. So, all right. So you can't get away from any discussion about anything relative to COVID-19, and its impact on all sports from the youth level to the professional level. What has the impact of COVID-19 had on the Superliga operations?
It's been a tragedy. Okay, we obviously canceled our spring program, and we've canceled what we know the fall Superliga tournament to be. The 6-7 week program that we do, competition we do. And based on where we are here in Rhode Island, we're in the phase 3 that does not allow inter-town competition. And that's been extended until late September. So we're in a wait and see to see if we can do something in October into early November. We don't know. Although, we see a lot what's going on with the universities throughout the country. And, you know, you become apprehensive with this. And it's had a big effect of not providing, you know, the competition or the experience for the kids. We've tried, as your new coach, Giovanni, we've turned to the technology and the webinar, and we, you know, we had a coaching education series for our coaches last spring, which was attended well and kind of petered a little bit toward the end. Coach, you created a coaches challenge for coaches to go through, certain things that they needed to do, and we got that started again for the fall. So even though we can't provide the experience that we want, the competition that we want for the players, you know, we're trying to keep coaches engaged as they try to do something in their towns, which, you know, here in Rhode Island, you can have a stable group up to 50 players now. So you're able to run a rec program with, you know, 14 division of, you know, 10 players in each, depending on age group. And those kids just play, you know, 4, 5, 6 weeks throughout the season. So that is as much extent that we can do here in Rhode Island until we wait for, you know, further updates. But myself and our staff we're depressed, but we understand. We don't want to create an environment that puts many at risk. You hear so many things as to the transmission of this thing and how it can happen. People who are asymptomatic can give it to you. Well, how do you know he or she is asymptomatic? You don't. The kids get it on the field and then they go home and they give it to grandpa. I mean, the scenarios just go on and on. And, I was talking to one of our coordinators about a week or so ago. And, he made a good point to me. He says, we're going to get to a point now is we have to manage risk. You know, what is the risk of doing something? And what are we willing to take a risk, or how far do we go to that risk? And that's what a lot of people are deciding now. We have clubs who have canceled their fall rec program because they don't want to take the risk. We have others who are trying to put something together, although, you know, obviously registration numbers are down because, you know, there are families who don't want to take the risk. So, and there are others who are dying to take the risk and dying to get on the field, you know, in perspective here. But it's been a very sad year, very, very sad year. Our hands are tied, but we understand what's going out there, and we don't want to create something that is going to make things worse for players, families, etc.
Yeah, those are all important things to take into consideration. Yeah, indeed, risk management. It's everything. It is indeed everything. I want to kind of touch base on something that is ongoing, and to those who are listening to this podcast, or if you're a DOC or you're president of a club or youth soccer organization, something that can still continue is coaching education. And you touched upon some of the things that you and I are doing, the video series on systems of play, do the newsletter, the Coaches Challenge, and making sure content gets out to coaches. That's something that can still be ongoing. You know, I think you've already made your point, but make your point again about the one thing that can still continue, the one thing that can still go forward to the betterment of not only the coaches, but ultimately the players, is this idea of them dedicating themselves to coaching education, even though COVID-19 has struck and there's no coaching taking place.
I agree. The technology right now is tremendous, that there are many opportunities that us as coaches can take advantage of now. Now, some of us may be doing some coaching because we have that opportunity, but through Superliga, we have, as you mentioned, Coach, those coaching series webinars, and we're working on putting a couple together for the fall. Mm-hmm. You go on the United Soccer Coaches website, you see tremendous amount of information there. You go on to, U.S. Soccer Learning, the United States Soccer Federation Learning site. You'll see tremendous stuff there. You can go on the U.S. Youth Soccer website. There's more tremendous information there. As a coach, if this is a little bit of a downtime for you, as we wait to, you know, get this COVID-19 eradicated or under control where we can now comfortably get our players out there and play the traditional soccer game that we're used to. This is a great opportunity to continue to enhance yourself as a coach, to continue to rest of your resume, I guess, is another word, to make yourself as best as you can, to then you're going to turn that into the players. The players are going to hopefully react to the knowledge that you've been able to gather during what could be the downtime, as we say, when this is going on. So the opportunity now for coaches are there. The only unfortunate thing, which Coach, you mentioned to me that may be changing, but is the certification process where, you know, a lot of it is a combination of webinar and in person. But I believe United Soccer Coaches is working on something where we can have it now online. So here's an opportunity for coaches now to take advantage of. So if you're not coaching or you're kind of in limbo, this is a great time now to continue to foster your resume, continue to foster your knowledge of the game. And as I mentioned earlier, I continue to do that also myself. I mean, I've been involved for over 30-some years in this, but I learn something every day almost from so many people. And even those who are probably involved in the game 2 or 3 years, they might find a technique or a mechanism or something, or even something technology-wise that helps improve a coach. So it's important. I think we should utilize this time as coaches to take advantage of this opportunity, if we're not coaching, to kind of, you know, re-energize ourselves maybe and maybe learn from each other. We, we're looking to also do with Coach Giovanni, you know, we started this, but unfortunately with the COVID, didn't go too far, but a monthly coaches meeting where, you know, we'll give an update to the coaches on certain things going on in the league, maybe a topic, and open the floor. What's on your mind? What do you like to discuss? What do you want to pickle Giovanni Pacini's brain with? You know, that type of thing. So I think it's an opportunity now, while we're going through this unfortunate situation, to take advantage of it. And technology right now is a key to that.
Well, your voice, Oscar, to every coach listening ears. You know, it's great advice and great.
And I'm sure, Giovanni, that some are. You know,
I
know those who are dedicated to this sport and really into it are doing that. And we just want those coaches to kind of, can we influence the others, influence the other ones,
yeah,
you know, to do the same, you know?
You just don't want people to totally shut down, the meaning, oh my God, well, you know, there's no spring season, there's no fall season, so you do nothing until it gears up again, when in fact, as a coach, there's plenty to do. There's plenty to keep you going, so that at the other end, when players do come back under, you know, hopefully normal circumstances, you're awaiting those players is an even more improved, well-educated, enlightened coach. So, Oscar, last but not least, you're going to look in front of you, my friend, is the crystal ball, right? You see the crystal ball? What does the future hold for the Superliga?
Well, you know, we're going to continue to strengthen our coaching education program with United Soccer Coaches. That is one of our key things that we want to continue to develop going forward. The other is strengthening the relationship with our referee program with the state referee committee. There is a new regime there now, and our referee director has created a good working relationship. So we're looking for that to flourish over the next several years. We continue to feel and sense the interest in participating in Superliga from our neighboring communities in Massachusetts and Connecticut. And we open our doors to them at any point. So we're looking to maybe expand a little bit more there. And also our relationship with the New England Revolution has been extraordinary. The guys up there that have worked with us over this many years have created some programs and some opportunities, some events that have really put made the youth soccer experience in Superliga tremendous. And I'd be remiss if I didn't mention our Superliga night that we host, that's hosted by the Revs up at the stadium. We get vouchers that each organization pays a very nominal fee for players to attend this event, to attend the game. But prior to the event, we had teams that play small-sided games on Gillette Stadium Field from like 1 to like 5, and we get like 80 to 90 teams playing. And the Revs do such a wonderful job of, you know, organizing it, getting the teams in, getting them out. The environment, the experience is extraordinary. From players to coaches to parents, it's incredible. We've got to the point where prior to this year, our event last year was about 5,000 participants, which was incredible. We had like one big section at Gillette Stadium. And then at halftime, we get the little 8s and 9s and 10-year-olds. You get about 30 or 40 of them and put them in the middle of the circle and tell them, kick the ball in that, you know, for like 6 minutes. I mean, those kids have never experienced something like that in front of a big crowd like that. So it's those type of things that, again, help make Superliga that youth soccer experience. And we're going to continue to work with the New England Revolution. Kyle Lindsay, I'd like to mention him, has been a great supporter of Superliga, great guy to work with up there at the Revs, along with Nick and James Mullins, also great guys. And even president of the club, Brian Biello, has been with us a few times and really been supportive of the events there. So we're really fortunate to have this experience with them. And we continue to build these things as we go along. You know, we've had the one event right before this whole COVID thing really blew out of proportion. The New England Revs have this new training facility there. So we invited all our clubs, for those, you know, that wanted to attend, to come and, you know, take a tour of the facility. And, you know, and we had a little bit of bite to eat and, you know, talk a little bit about the Revs, talk a little bit about Superliga. So I think those are events that continue to make and shape Superliga as a whole experience. So those are things that we're looking to continue to improve. And also the technology. We continue to try to make our website as user-friendly and as informative for folks as we can, especially for coaches and parents who look through it. So there, you know, we have a tech support person that works part-time with us that continues to help us upgrade the system as much as possible without making it too complicated for folks. So those are some of the things, Giovanni, that we continue to wanting to improve as the next few months move along and the several years move along.
Well, that crystal ball looks pretty good then. The crystal ball.
It does. I mean, right now it's a little blurry, right? It's a little blurry right now.
A little bit.
But we're going to need to shake it up a little bit, get it clearer so we can move on.
So, Oscar, if folks wanted to learn more about the Superliga, if folks wanted to kind of touch base with you and pick your brain about what your experience is, what's the best way to get a hold of Oscar de Lemos, and how might folks learn more about the Superliga?
Sure. So the best way is emailing me at odelemos@thesuperliga.com. So it's, you know, O for Oscar, first initial, and then my last name, de Lemos, DELEMOS, at thesuperliga.com, all one word, thesuperliga.com. Email me, and that's the best way. You can also visit our website to get familiar with some of the stuff we have there, although there's not a lot updated right now because there's not much going on, but it's www.thesuperliga.com. So those are the two best ways to learn about Superliga, get a hold of me. I think that's it.
Fantastic. That's great. And I encourage folks to do that. As you now have all listened to and have learned, you know, the Superliga is a very comprehensive, vibrant youth soccer organization. And
can I do kind of a shameless plug?
Of course, Oscar. I'll make you pay for it later.
I don't know if this is Giovanni Pacini has been our director of coaching education since February. And I met Giovanni personally for the first time like in November when we started doing the coaching education certifications. I met Giovanni at the first course we co-sponsored in Warwick, Rhode Island. And I just sat in the back of the room, listened to this gentleman, and I said, wow, this is the gentleman that we need to help spawn coaching education in our state, or within Super League. And so, you know, scheduled a few more courses, got the dorm, sat down, talked to him, and then we finally met in Baltimore at the convention to kind of finalize this. I will say Giovanni has made a great impact on us. We've gotten a tremendous amount of positive feedback from his appointment and his involvement. It is just, I know he's eager to get on the field and touch and feel some people, well, in the right way sense, right? To see people and conversate and, you know, get his experience pushed onto everybody. But obviously COVID hasn't allowed that. But we are very proud and honored to have Giovanni Pacini as our director of coaching. And that's not because I'm here on the podcast or anything. It's not only based on how we feel, but the tremendous amount of feedback that we've gotten over the several months of Giovanni's involvement in Superliga. And we look forward to a long-lasting relationship. So on behalf of our staff, our members, thank you so much for being part with us. We really appreciate it.
You are too kind. You are too kind. I am humbled by those kind words. Thank you so very much. I appreciate those words.
It's our pleasure.
It means a great deal. Thank you so much. So again, our guest today was Oscar De Limos, Director of League Operations for Rhode Island Youth Superliga. He's been our guest today. So we're going to break for a commercial, and we'll catch up with you on the other side of the commercial. This is Giovanni Pacini, GP Soccer Podcast. We'll catch you on the other side. Don't you dare go anywhere. Hey there, this is Giovanni Pacini of the GP Soccer Podcast. We're living through some incredible times these days as we all deal with the COVID-19 crisis. But we can deal with this together as a global community by just taking these amazingly simple steps that will go a long way in beating this terrible virus. Wear a mask. Use hand sanitizers after touching surfaces outside your home. Wash your hands for at least 20 seconds. Social distance when you're out and about in the community. Don't venture out if you don't have to. Be sure to disinfect surfaces in your home. And certainly, don't gather in crowds any larger than what health experts dictate. You know, we're all in this together, and together is how we'll beat this crisis. Stay safe out there.
Hi, this is Felicity Day from FC USA, and you're listening to the GP Soccer Podcast. Host Giovanni Pacini.
It's time to dip into the GP Soccer Podcast mailbag.
Yay!
Hey there, folks. Welcome back to the GP Soccer Podcast. Yes, indeed, I am Giovanni Pacini. Thank you so much to Oscar De Limos of the Superliga down in Rhode Island for being a guest today on the program. I deeply appreciate his participation. So, as I noted earlier, we've got something from the email bag here, and as I always do, there it is, downloaded on hard copy on a piece of paper, old-fashioned style, because I like to read it on a piece of paper. So here we go. Giovanni, I listen to your show quite regularly and have passed it along to other members of my club. Well, thank you for that. It has been helpful in learning more about the game. My question is based upon some conversation with other coaches in our club, and he puts in parentheses here, a small one with mostly parent coaches. And that is, can you sort out the difference between a system and a formation? Oh, and throw in style too. Thanks for doing the show and keep up the good work. Well, yeah, we can kind of sort that out a little bit. I think if my memory serves me correct, in a recent broadcast show with Ian Barker, I think Ian touched upon that in some of the courses that we offer with our soccer coaches. So let's start with the easiest way to start here, and that's formation. And that's basically, and anybody can do this, you know, putting players in a particular position. You know, if you picture, you know, a 1-4-4-2, a 1-3-5-2, a 1-3-4-3, whatever. That's a formation, putting players in a spot, right? That's kind of the easiest way to, you know, to talk about a formation. And a formation is predicated on a lot of things. You know, the style of play that you want to employ, the capacity of your players. You know, maybe you employ a formation relative to what your opponent is doing on an upcoming game day. There are a number of things that go into the formation that you choose to put together. Now, system is how that formation kind of comes to life. System is, and we could also use the word style, you know, the style of play or the system that you want to kind of employ. So, for example, you play a 1-4-4-2 formation, and the system, let's say I'm being very, very arbitrary here, right? The system may be predicated upon, okay, we want to put the predominance of our players in a defensive mode, 4 in the back block, 4 in the midfield block. Maybe we want to sit back in a low pressure situation. Maybe our two front runners, that, you know, maybe they're aligned side by side. Maybe they put a little bit of pressure on the opposing team as they cross the midfield line, let's say, for example. All right. So there is your, you know, there's your system, how the system's going to play. In said 1-4-4-2, your team wins the ball, you know, then you would have a style or a mindset that, this is how we're going to go forward, you know, in our attack. Again, very arbitrary here. So formation is just basically putting the pieces of the puzzle together, right? That's the simplest part. System or slash style is how that formation is employed. Now, the other things to keep in mind here is how the system, right, is employed, how it comes to life in the four moments of the game. That is, your team has the ball. Your team has lost the ball. Your team is defending. Your team has won the ball back. Okay? So what does the system do during those four moments? All right? I'll add another layer here. How does a system function in the respective thirds of the field? How it's going to function, you know, defensively in the defensive third is going to be different than, say, the attacking third. Right? Obviously, you know, very, very different dynamics relative to the thirds of the field. So when you're training your team, again, starting with the formation, that's the easiest part, you've got to make sure that your team knows, well, this is how we operate during those four moments of the game, and this is how we operate in the four moments of the game relative to thirds of the field, okay? And again, adding other layers, and there are a variety of things that can go into that. The weather, possibly, the opposition, the number of players you have available to you, you know, any number of factors are going to go into that. Your formation slash system might change, could very well change in the course of the game. I'll give you an example, right? Your team is down 1-0, there's 6 minutes left to go in the game, and you're playing a 1-4-4-2. I kind of stick with that one, okay? Well, you're down. Well, now it's time to kind of change your system and said your formation and system to say, well, my goodness, we need a goal to at least draw and hopefully two. So maybe instead of a 1-4-4-2, you go into a 3-4-3 or 1-4-3-3. You're adding the extra players up in the on the attacking block, right? And you may press a team higher. You need the ball to score. You're down 1-0. There's 5 or 6 minutes left to go in the game. So now you go from a 1-4-4-2 to, say, a 1-4-3-3. We're going to put our line of confrontation much higher. We may put an all-out press, a high-pressure press in the attacking half of the field, right, in order to get the ball back. And then it's all about, you know, we got the ball. We need to go to goal. We need to score, right, to go, you know, to get 1-1. Conversely, you're up 1-0 with 5 or 6 minutes to go. Well, you may typically play a 1-4-4-2. And again, I'm just going to stick with that one for continuity here. And maybe you're a team that kind of sits in the midfield, right? You don't high pressure. You don't sit back. You kind of split the difference and you have a presence. Well, now in defending that 1-0 lead you may have with 5 or 6 minutes to go, you may sit back and sit in a lower block or play even lower pressure and allow the team to come back, to come further up the field. And by doing so, you make it more difficult to penetrate in that 1-4-4-2. Heck, you can even take the 1-4-4-2 and make it a 1-5-4-1, put 5 across the back block, 4 midfield, and then 1 person up top to potentially counter to or to be that pressing player. So, again, believe me, folks, that's a nutshell. Because if you take a coaching education course, let's say, for example, you know, the Premier Diploma, where it's all about formations and systems of play and styles, you spend an entire week, you spend countless hours, you know, sorting out the very things I just did here in a matter of a couple of minutes. So I've scratched the surface, but it kind of gives you an idea of what formation is versus style, system slash style, right? I would definitely encourage folks in your club, if you're coaching the senior level player and they're playing 11-a-side, that you take the type of coaching education courses that will allow you to, you know, to do a more effective job with your team in terms of, you know, putting them in formations and ultimately a system and style of play. So I hope that answered your question. If not, you know, you can always email me back. I'll be more than happy to elaborate, but I would say to you, you know, go above and beyond yours truly and take a coaching education course. Well, folks, that's our show for today. We covered a lot of stuff. A great episode, I think. So, you know, if you like what you heard today, tell everyone. If you didn't, tell everyone anyway. If you'd like to advertise on the GP Soccer Podcast, you can contact me, Giovanni Pacini, at GP4Soccer, and that's the number 4, at yahoo.com, or at 617-968-1800. This is indeed Giovanni Pacini, GP Soccer Podcast, and goodness knows, I'll catch you later.